40%. I mean, just think about that number for a second.
Yeah.
It's one of those figures that looks unassuming on paper, but if you're a supply chain manager or a quality engineer, that number should really stop you in your tracks.
It absolutely should. According to the most recent industrial data we have on steel nickel plating, manufacturers can eliminate corrosion-related failures by, well, by exactly that much, 40%.
And we're not talking about a 40% saving on, you know, office supplies.
No, not at all. We're talking about the structural integrity of components that quite literally hold our world together. This is about the difference between a part that lasts 20 years in a harsh marine environment.
Right.
And one that suffers a catastrophic system failure in, what, 6 months? Maybe less?
The stakes here are just. They're incredibly high. If you're working in automotive, in aerospace, or the energy sector, a single plating failure isn't just a quality control issue.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something you can just fix with a stern email to a vendor. This is a catastrophic business risk. We are talking about multi-million dollar recalls.
And brand reputation. The damage to your brand can take a decade to repair, if ever.
Which is really why today's discussion is so critical. We have to dispel this, I think, very outdated notion that surface finishing is just dipping parts in chemicals at the end of the line.
Yes. If that's your mindset in today's environment, frankly, you are already behind the curve. We are looking at a radical, fundamental shift in surface engineering.
Welcome to Reflections. I'm Oliver Watts, and I'm here to dig into the story behind the specs.
And I'm Emma Rhodes, here to connect the dots between the complex chemistry and your bottom line.
Today, our mission is crystal clear. We're here to help professionals, engineers, procurement officers, operations leaders to streamline your processes, slash those hidden costs, and ultimately hit your sustainability targets for your most mission-critical components.
And we're going to do that by conducting a deep dive into a concept we're calling Beyond the Bath. This is really a definitive guide to precision electroplating in these very high-performance environments. We aren't just looking at the surface. We're looking at the engineering integrity of the entire component.
To guide us, we're pulling insights directly from a really comprehensive white paper on mastering steel nickel plating. The whole focus here is avoiding what they call the cost of compromise. So let's get right into it.
Let's do it.
First, I think we have to properly frame the problem. We need to understand this hidden tax of the status quo. The industry has shifted so much, hasn't it? The margin for error that we used to have in surface finishing, it's just gone. It has completely evaporated.
It has totally evaporated. If you look at the industrial landscape right now, the demands have shifted dramatically, but so many of the processes have just stayed stagnant. Global supply chains, for one, are demanding significantly longer life cycles. And we're putting these parts into much more extreme environments. We're talking higher temperatures, deeper subsea applications, more corrosive industrial atmospheres.
And yet you go into many procurement departments and the mindset, it hasn't caught up.
That is the friction point. Exactly. We still see this pervasive dip and ship mentality. It's a commodity mindset where plating is treated like an afterthought, just a final cheap step to make it shiny.
And, you know, to be fair, that approach probably worked okay for a while.
Of course. It worked fine if you were making, say, mild steel brackets for a toaster in 1995.
But if you apply that same 1995 mindset to a 2026 electric vehicle battery casing,
you are designing for failure. That commodity mindset fails completely when it's applied to modern engineering requirements. I mean, you have engineers designing these incredible high-performance parts with unbelievably tight tolerances, but the finishing process is often stuck in the past.
Let's dig into the material science of that disconnect, because it's fascinating. A huge driver here is the shift in the steel itself. We're not just using generic mild steel anymore. We're talking about HSLA.
High-strength, low-alloy steels, yes.
Explain what that means for people who aren't metallurgists.
Well, HSLA steels are really the backbone of modern infrastructure. Mm. They allow us to lightweight vehicles, which is huge for fuel efficiency and EV range. They let us build stronger bridges with less material. But, and this is the catch that bites a lot of manufacturers.
There's always a catch.
These steels are far more sensitive to processing conditions. They are, they're essentially high-strung racehorses compared to the workhorses of the past. They're much less forgiving.
So you can't just throw them in the same old chemical bath and expect the same old result.
Absolutely not. And then you have to layer the regulatory pressures on top of that. You've got REACH standards in Europe, ROHS compliance globally. These aren't just paperwork exercises for the legal team anymore.
No, they have real-world consequences on the shop floor.
they fundamentally change the chemistry available to the engineers on the floor. You can't use the harsh solvents or heavy metals you relied on 30 years ago.
So let me see if I have this right. You have a more sensitive, high-strength material that's more prone to stress, and you have a more restricted chemical toolkit to treat it with.
That is a recipe for trouble if you don't know exactly what you're doing.
Let's get specific about that trouble, because the source material outlines some failure modes that are, frankly, terrifyingly common.
Yeah.
I want to unpack the silent killer first. Hydrogen embrittlement. I think most people have heard the term, but can you explain what's actually happening at a microscopic level?
It really is a silent killer, precisely because you can't see it happening.
Right.
When you electroplate steel, the chemical reaction happening at the cathode, which is the part itself, it generates hydrogen gas.
Right.
Now, in high-strength steels, especially those with a certain grain structure, these tiny, tiny atomic hydrogen atoms can adsorb onto the surface and then they diffuse into the metal lattice. They literally squeeze in between the iron atoms.
So the metal is absorbing the gas like a sponge?
In a way, yes, but with much, much higher stakes. Once that atomic hydrogen is inside the steel, it can migrate to areas of high stress. Think of the root of a thread on a bolt or a microscopic void inside the metal.
And it just collects there.
It collects and it creates immense internal pressure. So now when you put that part under an external load, say, you tighten that bolt on a suspension bridge or an aircraft wing, that massive internal pressure combined with the external stress causes the steel to lose its ductility.
It stops bending and it starts cracking.
It becomes brittle. And here's the most dangerous part. It doesn't warp or bend first to give you a warning. It just snaps. A sudden catastrophic cleavage failure.
Wow.
And the worst part, it's often delayed. It might happen 24 hours after installation or a week or even a month later.
That is the absolute nightmare scenario. You install it, it passes inspection, everything looks fine, then it fails out in the field. The source also mentions a geometry problem called the dog boning effect. It sounds kind of cartoonish, but the implications are really serious.
It's a basic physics problem that turns into a very expensive manufacturing problem. In electroplating, electricity always follows the path of least resistance. It naturally wants to concentrate on the high current density areas.
Which are the edges and corners.
Exactly. The edges, the corners, the tips of a part, that's where the current flows most easily. So the nickel piles up on the corners.
And you get this shape that looks like a dog bone, thicker at the ends.
Right. You get this buildup of nickel on the sharp edges. But conversely, the center of the part, or more critically, the deep recesses and the internal threads, they get very little current, and therefore they get very little plating.
So this creates a dual failure, doesn't it? It's bad on both ends.
It is. On the edges, the part is now out of specification. It's too thick. If it's a fastener, maybe the nut won't fit anymore. You have assembly interference, which grinds your production line to a halt.
But the real danger is in the recesses, I'd imagine.
That's where the catastrophic failure happens. Those areas are underprotected. The coating is dangerously thin.
And that leads directly to the third common failure mode you see, microporosity.
Yes. If that nickel layer in the recesses is too thin, or if the crystal structure is inconsistent because the process wasn't controlled, you get microscopic purrs. It looks solid to the naked eye. It might even pass a visual inspection.
But it isn't.
But moisture, oxygen, salt, they can migrate right through those tiny pores and get to the steel underneath.
It's like wearing a raincoat that's actually made of mesh.
That's a perfect analogy. And the result is premature red rust. You might have a designer who specified a 20-year lifespan based on a certain nickel thickness, but because of microporosity in the critical areas, the part fails in field testing in 2 years or one.
This all brings us back to the business consequence. The white paper calls it the commodity trap.
It's a trap because it looks like a win on a spreadsheet. If a procurement manager focuses only on the lowest price per part for plating, hey, I can get this plated for 3 cents less per unit over here, they feel like heroes.
They even get a bonus.
They probably do, but they are completely ignoring the total cost of ownership, or TCO.
Because that cheap part is carrying this invisible backpack full of hidden costs.
Massive costs. You have the cost of secondary inspections because your own quality team doesn't trust the vendor. You have high rejection rates on your assembly line, which absolutely destroys your workflow and efficiency. You have warranty claims coming in from the field.
And the strategic drain.
I think that's the most damaging part. The strategic drain on your engineering team. If your best, most expensive engineers are flying around the country putting out fires and investigating rust, they aren't designing your next generation products.
It's the classic stepping over dollars to pick up dimes.
That is the perfect way to describe it. Absolutely perfect.
Okay, let's pause here for a second. I want to make sure we lock this in because this foundation really changes how we have to look at the solution.
Sure.
So here's where we stand. Point one, traditional plating methods are, for all intents and purposes, obsolete for modern high-strength, low-alloy steels. The materials have changed, and the old dip-and-ship methods just don't work anymore.
Correct. The science has moved on.
Two, we are seeing specific, predictable, scientific failures. Dog boning, where the plating is uneven, and the silent killer, hydrogen embrittlement, where the steel itself becomes brittle and just snaps. These aren't bad luck.
Yeah.
They are physics problems caused by poor process control.
It's science, not magic. And it's preventable.
And three, the hidden cost that TCO of these failures is massive. Mm-hmm. You think you're saving a few pennies, but you're paying for that cheap plating with expensive recalls, rework, and potentially irreversible reputation damage.
That is a perfect summary. We've defined the problem, the why. Now we need to look at the how. How do we fix it?
Exactly. So next, let's pivot to the solution. The white paper introduces a methodology it calls integrated surface engineering, or the precious plate protocol. This sounds like it's about a lot more than just buying better chemicals.
No, it is. It's a complete shift in philosophy. It's about the intersection of electrochemical analysis and creative engineering. It's moving away from the idea of plating as just an overlay or, you know, a coat of paint.
Right.
It's about creating a custom engineered nickel interface.
A custom engineered interface. So you're talking about a true metallurgical bond.
A metallurgical bond that is optimized for that specific grade of steel, that specific part geometry, and that specific end use environment. It's not one size fits all. It is tailored. It's bespoke.
The protocol breaks this down into three pillars of success. I think we should walk through them because this really feels like the playbook for fixing all the issues we just discussed. The first is the operational pillar, precision and predictability.
This is where we tackle the human element head on. Manual plating lines are notoriously inconsistent. You have an operator manually dipping racks of parts, manually dosing chemicals into a huge tank.
Eyeballing it.
Literally, people get tired. People get distracted. People make mistakes. The operational pillar focuses heavily on automation.
So we're replacing the manual dipping with what exactly? Are we talking about robots?
It's more about sophisticated logic controllers. It's about real-time bath monitoring and automated dosing. You have sensors in the tank that are constantly checking the chemistry of the bath, the pH, the nickel concentration, the temperature, the level of impurities, and a system that adjusts it automatically, millisecond by millisecond.
So it completely eliminates the, I think it looks about right, factor.
Completely. And the immediate benefit is consistency. Part number one is identical to part number 1,000,000, but it's also about speed. The data in the report shows a 20% reduction in lead times.
That's a huge number for a supply chain manager. How do they achieve that kind of speed just by automating the chemistry?
It's also about the tooling. It's about optimized rack and barrel design. Instead of just, you know, throwing parts in a generic bucket, you engineer the tooling itself. You design racks that hold the parts in the most efficient orientation for current flow and drainage.
Ah, so it helps prevent the dog boning right from the start.
Exactly. It optimizes the workflow. You can fit more parts on a rack, plate them more evenly, and move them through the line faster.
And that leads to this concept they mention of right first time manufacturing.
Which is the holy grail in any manufacturing process. You eliminate rework. You eliminate the need to strip parts and replate them, which is incredibly expensive, time-consuming, and it actually damages the substrate of the part. You get it right the first time, every time.
That leads us very nicely into the second pillar, the financial pillar, or what they call the economics of excellence. This is where I think some listeners might be skeptical. We're talking about high-precision, high-tech plating. Surely that drives the unit cost up, right?
The upfront unit cost might be marginally higher, yes. But the data argues very persuasively that it's a net cost reduction strategy. It really comes down to waste reduction and material efficiency.
This is where I wanted to ask about pulse plating. I saw that mentioned in the analysis by Davis K within the source materials. It sounds a little like sci-fi.
Pulse plating is fascinating. It's a really elegant solution. Traditional plating uses continuous direct current, or DC. Think of it as a steady stream of electricity, like turning on a fire hose.
Okay, just constant current.
Right. pulse clating modulates that current. You pulse it on and off extremely fast. We're talking microseconds.
What does that achieve? I mean, why would you turn it off?
It changes everything about how the metal ions nucleate and deposit on the surface. When you pause the current, even for a millisecond, it allows the ion concentration in the solution right at the part's surface to equalize.
So it stops that big rush of ions to the edges that we talked about earlier, the dog boning.
Exactly. It gives the solution a moment to catch its breath, so to speak. It significantly reduces the dog boning effect. You get a much more uniform, much more dense thickness across the entire part.
Which means, because the distribution is better, you don't have to overplate the edges just to get the minimum required coverage in the center.
And that means you use less nickel overall.
So you're saving material.
You reduce material waste significantly, the source says, by up to 15%, while actually improving the corrosion resistance. You're using less metal, but you're putting it exactly where it needs to be, and the grain structure is superior.
That is the definition of smarter, not just harder.
And it enables higher throughput. These modern high-speed chemistries, when combined with pulse plating, allow for faster cycles. You can run more parts per hour without compromising the grain structure or ductility of the nickel. So you're getting more product out the door, and it's a better product.
Which brings us to the third pillar. This is the strategic pillar. Scalability and edge. This sounds like it's about playing in the big leagues.
It is. This is about moving from being just a supplier to being a strategic partner. If you want to supply the major automotive or aerospace OEMs, you need unimpeachable compliance. You need to meet their rigorous internal standards, which are often tougher than the industry specs.
We were talking about tests like the salt spray test, ASTM B117.
The standard torture test, yes. You blast the part with a corrosive salt fog for hundreds, sometimes thousands of hours to see how long it lasts. The strategic pillar is about engineering a finish that will outlast the competition in that test every single time. It's about proving with data that your part is superior.
And there's a statistic in here related to that that really just jumps off the page at me.
I think I know the one you mean. The pilot programs with Tier 1 automotive suppliers.
Yes. They validated a 99.9% acceptance rate.
99.9%.
Across millions of parts.
Yeah.
That's not just good, that's almost statistical perfection.
It is, and that is what happens when you move from dipping to engineering. That level of reliability becomes a massive strategic advantage for the OEM. They know they can trust your supply chain implicitly, which allows them to reduce their own incoming inspections and simplify their entire operation. It's a huge win-win.
So we have the operational, financial, and strategic pillars. It's a very complete model. But finally, I want to drill down into the safety aspect one more time. We talked about hydrogen embrittlement as the silent killer. We know what it is, but how do we actually stop it?
This is the finally signpost of our discussion today, and it's maybe the most critical, mitigating the invisible risks. And the answer comes down to the science of the bakeout.
The bakeout. It sounds like cooking, but I'm assuming it's a little more precise than setting an oven to 350.
Just a little. It's extremely precise. Remember those tiny hydrogen atoms that got trapped inside the steel lattice? We need to give them enough thermal energy to diffuse back out of the steel before they get locked in and cause permanent damage.
So you heat the part up to a specific temperature to essentially force the gas out.
Yes. You have to bake the parts at a specific temperature for a specific duration, all dictated by the material spec and the hardness of the steel. But here is the absolutely critical part, and it's where so many commodity players fail. It has to happen immediately.
And when you say immediately, what are we talking about?
We are talking within hours of the plating process finishing. Depending on the steel grade and the specification, it might be a 4-hour window. For some critical aerospace components, it's a 1-hour window.
Wow.
You absolutely cannot plate a batch of high-strength steel parts on a Friday afternoon, let them sit on the shop floor over the weekend, and then decide to bake them on Monday morning.
Because by then, the hydrogen has already settled in and done its damage.
Exactly. By Monday, it's too late. The damage is done. The hydrogen has already started to migrate to those high stress points and cause irreversible microcracking. No amount of baking at that point is going to fix it.
So this protocol requires a professional bakeout cycle that is integrated directly into the line flow. It's not an optional extra step.
It is a zero defect necessity. It's non-negotiable. If you're dealing with high carbon, high strength steel for any kind of structural or safety critical application, this is not optional. It is fundamental to the part's integrity.
And I imagine closely related to this is adhesion testing, making sure the nickel actually stays on the steel.
ASTM B571, yes. This is another area where cutting corners leads to field failures. This ensures the nickel is actually truly bonded to the steel.
And this goes back to the pretreatment, right? Cleaning the part before it even touches the nickel bath.
100%. The vast majority of peeling and flaking issues, what we call adhesion failures, are caused by poor cleaning. You have oils from machining, you have scale from heat creating, you have oxides on the surface. If that surface isn't perfectly chemically clean and active, meaning the atomic structure is exposed, right before the nickel hits it, the bond will inevitably fail. Advanced pretreatment protocols eliminate those root causes.
It really does seem like a total paradigm shift. It's not just an improvement on an old process.
It is. You are moving from a world of reactive maintenance, putting out fires, dealing with angry customers, negotiating recalls, all that chaos, to a world of proactive performance.
It frees up leadership to focus on growth.
Exactly. If your top minds aren't constantly worried about your parts falling apart in the field, they can focus on hitting your growth targets. You stop managing liability, and you start managing expansion and innovation.
Okay, let's do one more quick reset here, because the solution is just as dense and important as the problem was.
Go for it.
So first, this precious plate protocol isn't magic. It's integrated engineering. It combines chemistry, geometry, and physics to create a custom-engineered interface for each part.
Correct. It's a holistic approach.
Second, these advanced technologies like pulse plating and automation aren't just fancy buzzwords. They represent real, tangible savings. We're talking about reducing material waste by as much as 15% and cutting lead times by 20%.
Real numbers that hit the bottom line. It's the economics of excellence.
And third, these rigorous, science-based protocols, like immediate bakeouts for high-strength steel, they are simply non-negotiable if you want to ensure safety and hit that incredible 99.9% acceptance rate.
You've got it. That's the framework.
As we start to wrap this up, I want to go back to that big picture idea from the white paper. It states, reliability is not accidental.
And that is the core message I really want everyone to take away from this. Every micron of metal on your component is a testament to engineering excellence, or a lack thereof. You cannot leave this to chance. You can't just hope for the best.
Listeners really have a clear choice here, don't they? You can stick with the status quo, that dip and ship commodity model, which, as we've seen, means accepting declining margins and a constantly increasing level of risk. Or you can choose to partner for technical synergy.
It really is a choice between sleeping well at night or waiting for that dreaded phone call about a field failure or a recall.
I want to leave everyone with a final thought to mull over. We've talked a lot about the technical side, the atoms, the amps, the chemistry. But I want you to think about the relationship side of your business. If your current plating partner treats your sophisticated, high-performance, critically engineered components with a dip-and-ship mentality, are they actually your partner? Or are they simply your biggest supply chain liability?
That is the question. That's the question every supply chain manager, every engineer, every CEO needs to be asking themselves today.
Now, for those of you who are listening and realizing you might be on the wrong side of that equation, here's exactly what you need to do. Don't just sit on this information. Don't let it become another thing you'll get to later.
Action is absolutely key here.
First, join the email list to get these kinds of insights delivered straight to you. Second, go to preciousplate.com. Just explore the site. The resources and case studies there are invaluable.
And if you are currently facing these challenges, if you're seeing rust, if you're dealing with adhesion issues, or if you're just bleeding money from high rejection rates, don't guess at the solution.
Right. Don't try to solve a chemistry problem with a business solution. Call a surface finishing engineer. Pick up the phone right now and call 716-283-0690.
That's 716-283-0690.
Talk to the people who understand the science. It's the first step to getting off that reactive treadmill.
It's the best move you can make for your product and for your company's future.
Until next time, keep reflecting and keep refining. Thanks for listening.
Goodbye, everyone.